You are now tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting from Burnaby, BC. Want to know more about the channel? Find us online at cjsf.ca.
Democracy Now.
Default was the giant sword hanging over America's head. But because of the good work of President Biden, as well as Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate, we are not defaulting.
The Senate has approved a bipartisan deal to suspend the debt ceiling, preventing the country from defaulting for the first time in history. We'll speak to California Congressmember Ro Khanna about why he and many progressive Democrats voted against the deal. Also, why he continues to call for his colleague, Senator Dianne Feinstein, to resign. Then we go to Atlanta, where a police SWAT team, guns drawn, raided the Atlanta Solidarity Fund and arrested three people who've been raising money to bail out protesters opposed to the construction of a massive police training facility known as Cop City.
We won't fight back here in the city of Atlanta. We won't fight back in the state of Georgia. We will call our caravans and organizers to come all the way across the country five more times.
Plus, the billionaire Sackler family gets legal immunity as a federal appeals court has ruled the makers of OxyContin can be shielded from prosecution for their role in creating and fueling the deadly opioid epidemic.
There is no admission of wrongdoing. And now, after the Second Circuit ruled, no individual, state, government will ever be able to sue the Sacklers in civil court and get them to acknowledge that they ever did anything wrong.
We'll also speak to a father who lost his 18-year-old son to the opioid epidemic. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The U.S. Senate has approved legislation to suspend the limit on the U.S. national debt ahead of a June 5th deadline to avoid a catastrophic default.
On this vote, the yeas are 63, the nays are 36. The 60-vote threshold having been achieved, the bill is passed.
The legislation imposes new work requirements on thousands of people receiving food stamps and other forms of government assistance. It also rolls back the National Environmental Policy Act and fast-tracks the approval and construction of the fracked gas Mountain Valley Pipeline through West Virginia and Virginia. Speaking after the bill's passage late Thursday, Senate Democratic Majority Leader Chuck Schumer defended the compromises which were sought by conservative West Virginia Democratic Senator Joe Manchin.
The bottom line is that the Mountain Valley Pipeline was part of the whole deal that I had originally struck with Manchin for the IRA. It does you take the whole plan, and it does a huge amount of good for the environment. I stick by my word.
Just five members of the Senate Democratic Caucus voted against the debt ceiling deal. President Biden, who's promised to sign the legislation, is addressing the nation at 7 p.m. Eastern this evening. In more news from Capitol Hill, the Senate voted Thursday to revoke President Biden's student debt plan to give 40 million U.S. borrowers up to $20,000 in loan relief apiece. Independent Senator Kyrsten Sinema joined Democratic Senators Joe Manchin and John Tester, along with all 49 Senate Republicans, in favor of repealing student loan relief. President Biden has promised to veto the bill. The governor of Russia's western Belgorod region says two people were killed and two others injured earlier today when Ukrainian forces shelled a town just inside Russia's border with Ukraine. This follows a cross-border raid by an anti-Putin militia on the Russian town of Shebekino, which injured 12 people and set more than two dozen buildings on fire, including a kindergarten. In Kyiv, officials say Ukraine's military shot down 36 Russian missiles and drones around the capital region over overnight. Two people were reportedly injured by falling debris. Meanwhile, a top Ukrainian minister said Russia's sowed winter crops for this year's harvest in parts of occupied Ukraine, claimed by President Vladimir Putin as Russian territory. Officials also said Russia is blocking the safe passage of Ukrainian shipments of food and fertilizer under the Black Sea grain export deal. At the United Nations, spokesperson Stefan Dujarric confirmed Russia has recently imposed a continuous slowdown at Black Sea ports.
This is a very serious situation. We need to move forward. The initiative is bound for renewal on 17 July. Global hunger hotspots are increasing, as we've been notifying you on a regular basis, and the specter of food inflation and market volatility lurks in all countries.
Ukraine's president has made a fresh push for membership in the European Union and NATO. President Volodymyr Zelensky made the request at a gathering of European leaders in Moldova, where he also called on Western nations to come to the aid of Moldova's leaders who've accused Russia of trying to destabilize and topple their government. This comes as foreign ministers from NATO member nations gathered in Oslo, Norway, Thursday to discuss the war in Ukraine and the possible expansion of the 31-member military alliance. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said he's pushing for Sweden's accession to NATO ahead of a summit in Lithuania planned for July 11th. NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said he'll soon travel to Turkey in a bid to convince President Recep Tayyip Erdogan to end Turkish opposition to Sweden's bid. Meanwhile, China's envoy to Ukraine has called for the U.S. and its allies to stop sending weapons to the battlefield and hold peace talks. Li Hui made the remarks from Beijing after returning from a 12-day tour of Europe and Russia.
Russia has said that it has never opposed peace talks and has always supported a political solution. Ukraine also said that it cherishes and desires peace. I feel that the two sides have not firmly shut the door to peace talks.
In Canada, hundreds of protesters disrupted the opening day of North America's largest military weapons convention, CANSEC, taking place in Ottawa. Activists on Thursday blocked vehicle and pedestrian entrances as they carried banners saying, "Stop profiting from war and war crimes start here." The peaceful action delayed Canadian Defense Minister Anita Anand's opening keynote address for over an hour, in which she went on to tout a new cross-border cybersecurity program aimed at protecting Canada's defense officials, contractors, and infrastructure. Anand told the crowd, quote, "Putin's war in Ukraine has reminded us that the cyber domain is crucial to our national security," unquote. Lockheed Martin is one of the convention's largest sponsors as its stock has soared following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. In Iran, the two women journalists whose reporting on Mahsa Amini's death in police custody last September helped set off a nationwide uprising were tried this week in what press freedom groups blasted as a sham trial. Elahe Mohammadi and Niloufar Hamdi had been prevented from seeing their lawyers ahead of the trial, and the lawyers were reportedly not permitted to present a defense in court during the closed-door proceedings. Last month, the reporters were awarded the prestigious 2023 UNESCO Guillermo Mocano World Press Freedom Prize, alongside a third imprisoned Iranian journalist and activist, Narges Mohammadi. Thousands of immigrant workers walked off their jobs across Florida Thursday to protest a draconian anti-immigration bill signed by Republican Governor Ron DeSantis that's set to take effect July 1st. The new law imposes harsh penalties on certain employers who don't check their workers' immigration status, among other measures. In Immokalee, workers and their families led a march denouncing DeSantis as part of a nationwide protest day called A Day Without Immigrants. This is an undocumented farm worker who kept her identity concealed as she spoke at the protest.
I ask the governor to have, above all, a conscience. All the vegetables and food that arrives at your table go through the hands of an immigrant, and that is all I can say. As mothers, as women, we are honest people who only come to fight for a better future for our family.
In more immigration news, a federal judge in Texas heard arguments Thursday in a lawsuit led by 9 Republican states to end the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program known as DACA. A new version of the 2012 Obama-era program was presented by advocates as they fight to salvage the relief, which has provided temporary protection from deportation and work authorization to hundreds of thousands of immigrants brought to the United States as children. The judge presiding over the case, Andrew Hanen, previously declared DACA unlawful in 2021, blocking all new applications while appeals are resolved in court. A ruling deciding DACA's fate isn't expected for months, and the case is likely to head to the Supreme Court. This comes as the Chicago City Council voted Wednesday to allocate more than $50 million from a budget surplus to provide emergency humanitarian aid and housing to the thousands of asylum seekers who've been sent to Chicago since last August by Texas Republican Governor Greg Abbott. This is Chicago Alderman Andre Vasquez.
So we've got around 10,000 asylum seekers coming from South and Central America. Close to 1,000 of them are currently living in our police stations, right? You're talking sleeping on mats on the floor, sometimes on the floor directly. And we're talking women, children, like whole families. So the city currently is looking to see how it's going to tackle it at a time where we don't have the funding and resources from the state and federal government to really adequately address it.
The Supreme Court has dealt a fresh blow to U.S. labor unions, delivering a ruling that makes it easier for employers to sue workers who go on strike. Thursday's 8-1 opinion, authored by Justice Amy Coney Barrett, sided with a Washington state business that sued members of the Teamsters Union after their work stoppage left wet concrete in trucks, forcing the company to throw away the cement at a financial loss. Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson was the lone dissenter. The Working Families Party blasted the Supreme Court's latest anti-union ruling, writing in a statement, quote, "The institution that was at one point the last line of defense for working people against oppression and corporate greed is now a bludgeon wielded against those very people by the wealthy and well-connected," they said. In Seattle, hundreds of workers at Amazon's corporate headquarters walked out Wednesday during a lunchtime demonstration to call out Amazon's inaction on its climate goals and labor issues at the company.
We want Amazon to do better. We want warehouse workers to have better conditions. We want responsibility towards climate problems and climate impact.
Workers also protested layoffs affecting 27,000 people since November and a recent forced return to office policy. Amazon corporate workers in other cities and countries took part in the walkout, many of them virtually. Bill Cosby has been sued by another woman for sexual assault. Victoria Valentino says Cosby raped her and sexually assaulted her friend at his home in 1969 after drugging them. Valentino, then an actor and singer, filed a lawsuit under a new California look-back law that gives sexual assault survivors a limited window to file civil suits that exceed the normal statute of limitations. Cosby, who's been accused of rape and other sexual crimes by dozens of women, was allowed to walk free from prison 2 years ago on a technicality over his 2018 sexual assault conviction. And a federal monitor investigating the death of 31-year-old Joshua Valles and other disturbing events at the Rikers Island jail complex. An autopsy revealed Valles died of a fractured skull, which appears inconsistent with prison reports. The monitor also accused the city jail of a lack of transparency. This comes as New York's Department of Corrections says it will stop notifying the press when someone dies in one of its jails. The Legal Aid Society said, quote, "This is another low light in the Department of Corrections campaign to keep outside eyes away from the catastrophe that is the city's jail system and the harm it inflicts daily on New Yorkers trapped inside its deadly walls." And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. President Biden's expected to soon sign legislation suspending the debt ceiling after the Senate voted 63-36 on a bipartisan deal that had been approved by the House earlier. The bill will prevent the United States from defaulting for the first time in history. The legislation also caps domestic spending below the current rate of inflation while allowing larger increases to the military budget. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer spoke after the vote.
Democrats are feeling very good tonight. We've saved the country from the scourge of default, even though there were some on the other side who wanted default, wanted to lead us to default. We may be a little tired, but we did it. So we're very, very happy. Default was the giant sword hanging over America's head. But because of the good work of President Biden, as well as Democrats in the House and Democrats in the Senate, we are not defaulting. Tonight's vote is a good outcome because Democrats did a very good job taking the worst parts of the Republican plan off the table. And that's why Dems voted overwhelmingly for this bill, while Republicans, certainly in the Senate, did not.
Ahead of the final vote, the Senate rejected a number of amendments to the legislation, including one by Virginia Democratic Senator Tim Kaine, who wanted to remove a section of the bill that fast-tracks the approval and construction of the controversial 300-plus-mile-long frack gas Mountain Valley pipeline through West Virginia and Virginia. Many progressive Democrats voted against the debt legislation due to the pipeline provision, as well as new work requirements for thousands of people receiving food stamps and other forms of government assistance. Meanwhile, a number of Republicans opposed the deal for not cutting non-military spending enough. Some of the senators who voted against the final debt deal include independent Senator Bernie Sanders, Democrats John Fetterman, Ed Markey, Jeff Merkley, and Elizabeth Warren, and Republicans Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, Lindsey Graham, and Josh Hawley. We go now to California Democratic Congressmember Ro Khanna, who voted against the legislation in the House. So can you respond to the passage in both the House and the Senate, why you voted against it, and why you also seem to be glad that it passed?
Well, it's good that our nation avoided default, but it came on the backs of the poor, of students, of the most vulnerable, of women. It was a punch in the gut to young climate activists across the country by entrenching the Mountain Valley pipeline. And progressives have been saying, why didn't we increase the debt ceiling back in the lame duck when we were calling for it? Progressives have been saying, why can't the Treasury Department just continue to pay the bills as they had the constitutional obligation and duty to do? Larry Tribe has said they can do that. The Treasury could keep paying the bills and the Fed is not going to bounce the Treasury checks, and the courts would have upheld that. So there are many other ways that we could have avoided this default. And we did not think that we should avoid the default on the backs of the most vulnerable.
So why didn't the House, when it was still in control of when the Democrats were still in control after they lost in 2022, but the new party, the new Congress hadn't taken over, why didn't they do this?
We should have. Some of us were calling for us to do that. Now, back then, we were trying to finish the Inflation Reduction Act. That is a very important piece of legislation, and I'm proud of it. But there may have been a hesitation to negotiate both for that and for the debt ceiling increase. That was a mistake. I much rather that we have been negotiating just with Senator Manchin than with McCarthy. Maybe the Mountain Valley Pipeline would still have been is something that would have been in the agreement, though many would have worked very, very hard to prevent that. But certainly some of the framework, which increases defense spending and decreases social spending for social programs, would not have been in that framework. And you also would have had some alternative sources of revenue, because even Senator Manchin believes we need to get rid of the carried interest loophole, that we need to increase taxes. So the biggest mistake, in my view, was that we did not do this in the lame duck. But the second point is, it's not just the left or the fringe that is saying that the president is constitutionally obligated to pay the bills of what past Congresses have said. This is Larry Tribe's view. Paul Krugman has said, why is Treasury not coming up with multiple places of paying these bills? And it was actually Secretary Yellen who was warning back in November and December, urging the Congress to do something.
House Minority Whip Catherine Clark said Republicans forced Democrats' hand.
There is no perfect negotiation when you are the victims of extortion. Nobody likes to pay a ransom note, and that's exactly what tonight's vote is.
So if you can elaborate on that and also talk about what it means, these work requirements for people who, for example, are sick or hungry.
Well, let me answer the work requirements first. Think of a 51 or 52-year-old mom who is disabled or has a back pain or has some health condition, and she isn't able to go to work. She will be denied $6 a day. Now, if she has a custodian relationship with a child, that may not be technically recognized under the law as a parent-child relationship. This is going to hurt women in their early 50s the most, according to a lot of the studies. Now, people say that the president got an exemption for veterans and for homelessness, and I applaud him for that. But you can't penalize and hurt one group of people and then applaud that another group of people is being helped and think that all washes out and is fine. That sort of utilitarian calculus, the pain of one group is justified by the improvement of the others. I don't believe in that way of moral ethical reasoning. I believe in the dignity of every individual, that you don't hurt one group to help another. And Democrats should not be for hurting women in their 50s, poor Americans in their 50s, try to reduce a deficit when we could have been reducing extraordinary defense spending or these extraordinary tax cuts. And Catherine Clark is right. Look, the Republicans are the ones who held the economy hostage here, who demanded a ransom note. But we shouldn't then say, OK, we're going to embrace a framework that it adopts their view that defense should go up and social spending should go down. What we should say is, if they're going to hold us ransom, then we're going to pay the bills and go to the Roberts Court. Is the Roberts Court really going to tell Janet Yellen to stop paying bills that she's constitutionally obligated to do? Is the Roberts Court really going to tell Powell to bounce Janet Yellen's checks? I just don't see the courts doing that.
And the issue of MVP, which, of course, has positive connotation, when it comes to sports, but is the Mountain Valley Pipeline that so many have opposed, saying that the greenhouse gas emissions that could result from the fracked gas that goes through the pipeline could be equivalent to something between 26 and 37 coal-fired power plants. You have that within this bill. You also have Biden going forward on the Willow Project in Alaska. Can you talk about the significance of this? And also, a person you've talked about is your friend, Senator Manchin, the power he has almost as the second President Joe.
Well, this is a punch in the gut to climate activists around the country, to young people around the country. They saw some momentum with the Inflation Reduction Act, where Congress finally passes a major investment in solar and wind, in batteries and electric vehicles. And then they see the administration approve the Willow Project in Alaska, and they're bewildered. How can an administration that is focused on climate then be allowing for this drilling in Alaska? And now they see the expedited approval of the Mountain Valley Pipeline, saying that the courts don't matter. If the courts are finding environmental harm, we're going to go build this pipeline that is going to hurt local communities, that is going to hurt the environment, and we're going to do this in a bill that has nothing to do with climate policy. This is just drives a cynicism. And some of us voted no to speak up for them, but we really have to understand that there's a disillusionment that we risk when every time we do this, we chip away at young people's faith that this country is serious about the climate. Now, I said to Senator Manchin during the whole Inflation Reduction Act that we were going to have to make compromises with him, and I was part of some of those conversations. But I think the Mountain Valley Pipeline is a bridge too far. We did make compromises with him. We had funding in there for carbon capture. We had funding in there for nuclear. We had funding in there for technologies of a potential carbon removal. The amounts that we allocated for climate were far less, ultimately, than what we started with. We got rid of a lot of the sticks for utilities from the clean electricity program. We reduced the fee of methane. It's not like there was not a compromise. This is a bridge too far.
I wanted to ask you about a different issue, Congressman Khanna. Last month, your colleague, Democratic Senator from California, Dianne Feinstein, returned to Capitol Hill for the first time since her office announced a diagnosis of shingles in February. The 89-year-old California Democrat said in a statement she'd resume her duties with a lighter schedule. She had missed 91 floor votes in the Senate. Her absence stalled the advance of President Biden's judicial nominees. After Republicans denied Democrats' request to temporarily replace her on the Senate Judiciary Committee. The San Francisco Chronicle last year published a story raising concerns about Feinstein's mental faculties months before this most recent announcement of shingles. And now there's been some discussion, I think, in the New York Times and others that it was complicated by encephalitis. That's inflammation of the brain. California Congress member, you and some of your colleagues, including New York Congress member Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have called on Feinstein to retire immediately. Now, in April, former House Speaker Nancy Pelosi said calls for Feinstein to resign are sexist. This is what she said.
It's interesting to me. I don't know what political agendas are at work that are going after Senator Feinstein in that way. I've never seen them go after a man who was sick in the Senate in that way.
So that was Senator Pelosi. That was former House Speaker Pelosi. You were calling for Dianne Feinstein to resign when she wasn't able to come back. Now she is. Why are you continuing to call for her to resign?
It's a very sad situation. And the reality is that she's not able to do the job. In fact, just yesterday in my district, someone was talking about vacancies in the San Jose District Court, and could I contact my senator to discuss that? And I contacted Alex Padilla, because the reality is no one can get in touch with her that I know of. She just has a staff that's running everything. And it's a very, very sad situation, and she should step down with dignity. Now, the New York Times has a long editorial where they actually refute Speaker Pelosi's statement, and they say this has nothing to do with sexism or ageism. This is simply the view that people should be able to do the basics of the job. And that is, again, respecting the voters. Here is, I think, partly what's going on in candor. There is a concern about who Governor Newsom would appoint if Dianne Feinstein stepped down. And Governor Newsom has said that he would appoint a Black woman. And I want to be transparent. I'm a co-chair of Barbara Lee's Senate campaign, and many people have speculated that Barbara Lee would be one of the potential people that Gavin Newsom could appoint. And that, I think, is coloring a lot of why people want Dianne Feinstein to say. To that, I have a simple reply. For 250 years in America, we've been tipping the scales against Black women. If one time the scales were tipped in their favor, it's not the end of the world.
So just to be very clear, you're saying that because Gavin Newsom said he would appoint an African-American woman, he had said that to replace Kamala Harris, but then ended up appointing Alex Padilla, the first Latino senator to represent California. And so now it's come down to this. Now, Nancy Pelosi has thrown her support to Adam Schiff. Katie Porter's also running. If Barbara Lee were were appointed now, the concerns, as all the articles are talking about, is that would it give her a leg up in this Senate race? Do you think that's the reason Nancy Pelosi is throwing around these other charges, trying to keep Dianne Feinstein in office? Politico has a piece I'm looking at right now. Feinstein's primary caregiver, Pelosi's daughter. Whenever you see Dianne Feinstein, the senator in the Senate now, you often see right next to her Pelosi's oldest daughter, and some are saying she's really preventing her from being exposed to the press and others. Is this Nancy Pelosi's real concern, is her favoring Adam Schiff for the Senate?
I respect Speaker Pelosi, and I certainly don't want to speculate on her motives, but I do think more generally this is the primary concern of what's motivating people to keep Dianne Feinstein in and who's going to succeed her. And many people, in fairness to Gavin Newsom, he never, in my understanding, made a hard commitment after